Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
So chapter 1, which is called Sainya Darshan, or Observing the Armies. It is also known as Arjuna Vishada Yoga, which means the dejection of Arjuna. In some commentaries it is called like that. There is some, especially the first verse example of difference in pronunciation. If you hear Swami Maharaj Prabhupada pronounce, he says Dharma Kshetre. But Srila Govinda Maharaj, when he chants, he says Dharma Ketre. So my conclusion is either and or both are correct. Must be.
One is Bengali, one is Hindi.
Hindi.
But Sanskrit, it is Sanskrit.
Sanskrit
not
is
Hindi
Chetra.
Or
Chetra. Sanskrit is nearer to Hindi.
Anyway, Srila Gurudev was a scholar of Sanskrit.
But I can hear it's pronunciation.
No, Gurudev, if you listen to Gurudev's pronunciation, he says Ketre.
Ketre.
Yeah.
But
it is, either is acceptable. But my preference, personal preference, is how Gurudev pronounced. I think like that, try to pronounce like that. But other is not, no different, no problem. So first of all, I'll chant the verse, and then together we'll chant the verse, okay? Each one. Dhritarashtra uvacha dharma ketre kuruketre samaveta jujasava mamaka pandavas chaiva kimma kurvatta sanjaya. Now together.
Dhritarashtra uvacha dharma ketre kuruketre samaveta jujasava mamaka pandavas chaiva kimma kurvatta sanjaya.
Iti Sri Mahabharate Satta Sahasrayam Samhittayam Vaishashikyam Bhijma Parvani Sri Mad Bhagavad Gita Shupanishad Subrahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre Sri Krishna Arjuna Samvade Sainya Darshana Nama Pratamo Jayaha. End of chapter 1, Observing the Armies, from the conversation of Sri Krishna and Arjuna in Srimad Bhagavad Gita Upanishad, the yoga scripture of transcendental knowledge in the Bhishma Parva of Sri Mahabharata, the holy scripture revealed by Srila Vyasadeva in 100,000 verses. So there we are, the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. For me, this was the most difficult chapter when I first started studying Bhagavad Gita. All those names. And, you know, for an English boy from a farming village, but they didn't mean much to me, all those names. Now, actually, after having read Mahabharata, then I know who these characters are, mainly. But then I could not understand or even pronounce or anything what this was. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, is the whole book like this? How will I manage this? But I persevered. I think in a way it's the first chapter is a little tester, you know, to see who is sincere to go on and find out. Because the main part is describing who this chapter, who the combatants are arrayed there on the side. But importantly, Arjuna's feelings of dejection and sadness at seeing all of his family members ready to lay down their lives for this battle. And if we remember what the background of that is, the whole Mahabharat leading up to that. So that is the two warring families, the Pandavas and the Kauravas. Actually, they are the same family, Pandu and Dhritarashtra. They are brothers. And Pandu was the king, but Pandu was cursed after killing a sage. Accidentally, he killed a sage when he was hunting, and cursed by that sage. That if ever you will take the have sexual intercourse with a woman, even it be your wife, immediately you'll die. So that was ostensibly the end of the Pandu line, because he could not ignore that curse. But Kunti Devi, his first wife, he had two wives, Pandu, Kunti and Madri. So then Kunti Devi, she had been given a boon when she was a young girl by Surjadev, the god of the sun god, and he had given her a mantra by which calling that, by telling that mantra and meditating on any god, that god would appear before them, before her, and she could have a child with that god. Then when Pandu understood this, then he, to maintain his line, he asked her to use the mantra. And the first she meditated on Dharma, Jamaraj, and who is one of the 12 Mahajans, the authorities on Vedic knowledge. And he appeared and to her, and she was given the child, Yudhisthira. Then again she called, using that mantra, she called to Indra. Next was Vayu. Yes, you were right. Next is Vayu, the god of the wind. He is also called Pavan. And from him, she had the son, Bhimsen. So, and Vayu also, if you'll remember, is the father of Hanuman. So Bhimsen and Hanuman are brothers. Then she called Indra. And when Indra appeared, Arjun was born. Actually, before, when she called that mantra and called the sun, actually it was a mistake. When she was a young girl, she's looking at the sun and thinking, how beautiful is the sun? And that mantra came in her mind, and suddenly Surya Dev appeared there. And he said, yes, you will have a child. And she said, no, I'm not married or anything. I cannot have a child. Then he said, it is okay. Your chastity will remain intact. The child will be born from your ear. And from the ear came Radheya or Karna. But like the Moses story, she put him in a basket because she was embarrassed, being just a young girl and unmarried and so on. And she put him in a basket and put him in the river. And he was adopted by a charioteer and his wife. Anyhow, he later became a great warrior, naturally, being the son of the sun, and naturally his tendency will come. Then after that, Pandu said again, and she said, no, it will not be right to call more than three times. Then she said, but I will tell the mantra to my sister Madri. Means his Pandu's other wife. So she told them a mantra to Madri, but she told Madri only once you can use. So Madri, being very exceptionally clever. She meditated on the Ashin Kumars, who are twins. So two fathers, and from them was Nakula and Sahadev were born. So five brothers, sons of Pandu. But later when Pandu was on a hunting trip in the jungle, and when he came to a very beautiful place and in a very heavenly atmosphere, he was with his wife Madri, and you see, even though he knew he would die, his desire for union with his wife was so strong that he could not, even though he knows this, I will die, but he could not stop himself, and made love with his wife, and immediately he died. So after that, the boy's now fatherless, and Madri, she went with Pandu on the funeral pyre. That is called Sati, after Sati when she... And even up until maybe 100 years or so ago, some places that still was carried out in India, but by force. They would force the widow onto the fire with the husband, and she would die in agony. In fact, it is one of the four things forbidden in Kali Yuga. Sati is forbidden in Kali Yuga. The example is given by the wife of Jayadev Goswami. The wife of Jayadev, he was the Jayadev was in the court of the king, and the king's wife, she was bosom friend with Jayadev's wife, and one day she told her, "I very much admire women who do sati." Means go on the funeral pyre with their dead husband. And Jayadev's wife, her name was Lilavati, I think, Lilavati. And she told the queen, "No, if the wife is chaste, immediately she hears that her husband is gone, she will also leave her body. No, not necessary to go on the fire, in the fire." Then, reflecting on that, the queen thought, "I'm going to test that out." And a few days later, and maybe when it had all been forgotten, when Lilavati came to see the queen took her by the hand. "Oh, I'm so sorry. Here, I heard your husband passed away this morning," and you know, gave some like convincing performance. And immediately, Jayadev's wife fell down dead when hearing that news. And then the king came, and the queen was beside herself. "Oh, I didn't mean that. Really, I didn't mean that to happen." But the queen besides herself. And then the king came, and then Jayadev was called. But Jayadev called his wife's spirit back to her body, and again she became ill. But anyhow, Madri did sati. And the reason is forbidden in the Kali Yuga is because no one can do sati. To sit on the funeral pyre with your husband, you will die in agony, must die in agony. But in previous ages, where the husband will go, wife will go, and then she will be absorbed by yogic fire, no pain or anything. It is a gateway to go where her husband has gone, she will also go. But anyhow, so now the boys, they are orphans. So, and Dhritarashtra became the king, although Dhritarashtra is blind. That's why Pandu became the king, because Dhritarashtra was blind, but now he had to assume the role as the king. And he adopted the boys naturally, but there's rivalry between them, the five Pandavas, and 100 sons of Gandhari and Dhritarashtra. 100 sons. And first son is Duryodhan. And we hear that the night when Duryodhan was born, so many bad omens came in the sky. You know, like blood falling from the sky and all terrible signs, those who can read those signs. And the Brahmins, they came to Dhritarashtra and said, "You know, this boy is the devil incarnate. You should finish him now, otherwise he will be the destruction of your whole dynasty. Will be the cause of that. Finish him now while he's just born." But already, although he's only a few minutes born, already Dhritarashtra and Gandhari so much attached, they cannot do that. A very difficult thing. Attachment is a very difficult thing. Especially for a king. King's duty is to protect his citizen. And the Brahmins, who are seers, they have told him, this: if this boy is allowed to live, your whole kingdom will be ruined. Everything will be finished. But he could not. For the sake of one, he could not sacrifice that one for the sake of so many others. His whole kingdom. Anyhow, the history, there's so many history. The boys, as they're growing up, they're living as brothers, although cousins, but living as brothers, but always rivalry between, and especially between Duryodhan and Arjun, because Arjun is super talented warrior. And their guru is Dronacharya. Dronacharya is teaching them the military arts, archery, sword fighting, and so many things, the divine astras, and so many things. And always Arjun coming up out number one. He's always number one. And Duryodhan, it burns him to see that. Can't stand that. This rivalry becomes worse and worse and worse. And so many things happen that finally we know. It all culminates in a gambling match. Gambling match is because Yudhisthira's weakness is gambling. Yudhisthira is the son of Dharma, but he has this weakness for gambling. Go figure. But it is allowable. For Kshatriya, gambling is allowed. Not for a Brahmin. Brahmin must never gamble. But Kshatriya can gamble. But Duryodhan's uncle, his Shakuni, he is a cheater. At dice, he is an expert cheat. And so the challenge is given to Yudhisthira to play against him, against Shakuni, and he cannot win because Shakuni is so clever at cheating with the dice. He cannot win. So everything, he gambles away everything. This is what happens. Gambling is like a fever when it takes you, because you're always thinking, next time I'll win it back. I'll win it all back. Really, that's why it is one of the gateways, you know, one of the activities that destroys Dharma is gambling, because it is so destructive. Anyhow, Yudhisthira loses everything, and finally, after gambling away everything, he gambles away his wife also, Draupadi. And Draupadi, she is also a warrior. Draupadi is the daughter of Draupada. Draupada had two children born from fire. Draupadi and Dhrishtadyumna. Dhrishtadyumna. His name means the fireborn. What a great name. The fireborn. Dhrishtadyumna. And Maharaj Draupada, he specifically had these children born by fire sacrifice for two purposes. The daughter to give to Arjun as his bride, and the son to kill Dronacharya. Just for those two purposes, those children were born. So finally, he gambled away his brothers, being the older brother. He's the guardian, father already gone. He's the guardian, and he gambled them all away. Then gambled himself away. Then gambled Draupadi away. Then they called Draupadi. That is very famous. is called Draupadi Vastaharana, where she's dragged before the assembly of all the warriors there, and they try to strip her naked. Dushasan pulled her by the hair, and although she was not fit to come out at that time physically, she was pulled by the hair and stood in front of the assembly, and they try, and Duryodhan said, let's see her naked. I am her husband now. I want to see her naked, and everyone to see her naked. And pulled up his dhoti and showed his thigh. Do you like my thigh? I am your new lord. What do you think of that? This is the thigh of your new. Bhim saying he can't control himself. Smash that thigh. I will not rest until I smash that thigh and rip out your heart and drink your blood. And Draupadi also, she's a warrior, and she said, and I will not again tie my hair until Bhima ties my hair with his hands still soaked in the blood from your heart, which he is drunk from. This is fighting talk. But Duryodhan didn't care for it. He didn't care. He's invincible now. He's the king of the world. He's defeated his enemies, and now he is humiliating them. And what greater humiliation than to strip their wife naked in front of the whole assembly? Then Dushasan. Dushasan is a Maharati. That means he has the strength of 1,000 elephants. That's pretty strong. Then, although she is also a warrior, a warrior princess, she can't, you know, she can't defend herself against someone with the strength of 1,000 elephants. So he tries to remove her sari. She's holding her sari to protect her modesty. And then she calls to Krishna. Krishna, save me. Krishna is not there. He's not even there. He's somewhere else. But he heard her call. And not only that, especially when she says, Hey Govinda, hey Jashoda Nandan, hey Gopi Jana Vallabha. Guru Maharaj said, when she said Gopi Jana Vallabha, then Krishna, he couldn't remain detached from her. Immediately he came. And that time, she was holding her sari, but then she threw her arms in the air. Hey Krishna, hey Govinda, hey Gopi Jana Vallabha, with her arms in the air. She thought, what's the point? I can't do, only he can defend me. And Krishna, we know, supplied her unlimited sari so that no matter how much cloth they removed, she was still covered. On and on, no end to it, Krishna, until they were defeated. Those great Maharatis all defeated. And Srila Guru Maharaj said, this is the highest point of Mahabharata, even more than Gita, is this surrender of Draupadi to Krishna. The highest point of the Mahabharata, the highest teaching of Mahabharata is this, even more than Gita. Anyhow, finally, Draupadi made a very impassioned plea to the grandsires of the dynasty, and Bhishma and Dhritarashtra, they had to overturn what had happened and you know, set the Pandavas free, based on what Draupadi said, how she pleaded her case. Very clever and wise she was. And they were set free. But after being set free, then Duryodhan convinced Dhritarashtra, make him come back for one more game, like all or nothing. And Dhritarashtra, although he's reluctant, he cannot refuse his son. So Yudhisthira was called back, one last game, this is it, winner takes all. And of course, when Sukuni threw the dice, he won and Yudhisthira lost. So now, the forfeit was, they have to go into exile. Was it 14 years? 14 years, yeah. So 14 years the Pandavas had to go into hiding, into exile. But the last year they had to go into hiding, and if they would be discovered in that last year, then they would have to go in exile for another 14 years. So last year they're hiding in the court of Maharaj Virata, and there they are taking some roles. Arjuna had been cursed by Urvasi, the consort of Indra, because she desired, when he was in heaven visiting his father Indra, then Urvasi, who is the most beautiful concubine of Indra, if you will see her, you will forget everything about your religious life, and you cannot, no one can resist. She is so beautiful. Then she came to Arjuna's room in the night, and desiring Arjuna, and she came to the door. And when she came to the door, Arjuna said, "How can I help you, mother?" And she was so angry to be called mother when she came there for something else.
Spoiled her plans.
Spoiled her plans. Then she cursed him. She's very powerful. And she cursed him that he would lose his masculinity for his offense to her. Then when Indra heard about that, he told her, you have to modify your curse, because he is a great warrior and he's my son, and I cannot have him like becoming effeminate. He said, so do not say you have to withdraw the curse, but you have to modify it. She modified the curse that he could choose the time when he would lose his masculinity and the duration for which he would lose that. So that the last year of their exile, Arjun became a eunuch in the court of Maharaj Virata, and he was teaching the king's daughters music and dance and the arts and all of these things. And to all intents and purposes, living like a lady, like a transsexual. And Bhim saying he was the cook, and Yudhisthira was disguised as a Brahmin, and Nakula, one was an astrologer, a court astrologer, and the other, I forget now. Oh, yeah, looked after the horses, yeah. So anyhow, finally, the very last moment there, they're discovered at the very last moment, and now the only way forward now is war. Actually, they're not discovered. I mean to say, they're not discovered. They managed to evade. They were discovered, but because of some time difference between the regions where they were, then it was proven that they had actually gone the whole year without being discovered. Anyhow, so now the Pandavas, they come to demand their birthright. But Yudhisthira, he doesn't want conflict. So he told to Duryodhan, just give us each a village. We'll be happy with that. We don't care any kingdom or anything. One village each. We'll be satisfied. And Duryodhan told, I will not give you even enough land to put on the top of the head of a pin. I will not, even that I will not give you. Then war was the only recourse. And even Krishna tried to stop the war even then. He went as ambassador to try to stop the war, but it was inevitable. When Krishna went, they tried to capture him. Duryodhan thought, if we capture him, then the Pandavas, they'll lose their will to live, they're so devoted to him, then easily we can defeat them. But then they tried to capture Krishna, and Krishna showed his Virat Rupa, his universal form, and he told, now Duryodhan, where will you put your chains? The whole universe. Now what will you do? So anyway, all of these things. But finally, after everything, war was inevitable. Sometimes it is inevitable. And this is the background of Bhagavad Gita. So now the war is happening. All the armies are arrayed against one another. And Arjuna wants to see what will happen. And so he told Krishna, move my chariot in between the armies, I want to see who's there. And then he sees there his cousins, his grandfather, his guru, so many beloved family members and friends and so on, all on the other side because of their vow to their allegiance to the king. They cannot, although they love the Pandavas more than their own life, their duty demands that they have to fight against the Pandavas. So when Arjuna sees all of this, he becomes completely overwhelmed. And as we heard, he told to Krishna and gave so many reasons why we shouldn't do this fight. And they're all good reasons. They're all good reasons. Very intelligent, well thought out, and responsible reasons why better not to fight. But as we'll see in the next chapter, Krishna is not having any of it. So, I read just a few days ago, when I'm preparing for this, in the commentary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's saying that this Arjuna now, he's showing the symptoms of a Kanishta Adhikari devotee, of a neophyte devotee. Neophyte devotee always thinking about mundane reasons why we should not try to satisfy Lord Krishna. There are always reasons, so many duties that we have, so many obligations that we have in the world, and not to satisfy Krishna. And ultimately, the Gita teaches us that above all of these socio-religious rules and regulations and strictures, which Arjuna is speaking about, you know, if those who destroy the dynasty, they reside perpetually in hell, he's telling, like this, and the women will be unprotected if all of the men are killed. And when the women are unprotected, then unscrupulous men will take advantage of them, and the reaction is Varna Shankara. In Guru Maharaj's, it's called, what does it say? Adulterated progeny. Prabhupada says unwanted progeny. It is actually the case nowadays, unwanted progeny. So many children born that are unwanted in the world. It is a fact. And so all of these things, but they're all saguna. Saguna means within the realm of this material thinking. Material thinking. Because ultimately, all of those things are temporary. And Bhagavad Gita, as we progress through it, we'll see that, first of all, Krishna's telling to Arjuna, you cannot go against what is your nature, first of all. Although it is saguna, that also is saguna. Whether you are, you know, Brahmin or Kshatriya or Vaishya or Shudra, that is only for now. It is what Srila Guru Maharaj says, acquired prejudice and conditioning from this material world has led us to these natures. But they're not actually our eternal nature. Our eternal nature is as servant of Krishna. That is the eternal nature of everyone. And that is not touched by any varna or any ashram or anything. So, although Arjuna is giving arguments from the point of view of Varnashram, and good and solid arguments, Krishna wants to teach him, and through him us, that above Varnashram is the Sanatan Dharma or Jiva Dharma, the Dharma of the soul, which is submission to the Lord. And this is Krishna's teaching to Arjuna, finally, to submit to Krishna. To Krishna's will. And later on we hear Krishna says, I've already killed them all anyway. I just want you to take the glory for doing it. It is already decided. And they are already finished. But I want you to be my instrument for this and for your fame as my devotee to be known all throughout all the worlds. So it's up to you whether you act as my instrument or not, or whether you go by according to your own whims and your own thinking. We're reminded of Srila Gurudev when he told us when he came to Guru Maharaj. Guru Maharaj, first, more or less, one of the first things he said to him was, "Can you follow me and not follow your mind?" And Srila Gurudev said, "Yes, I will." But he said, I'm thinking, my mind not always giving me bad advice, sometimes giving me good advice also. But this is the process of surrender, is that good or bad, we leave that for the will of the Lord. And the will of the Lord is manifest through his devotee. So by submitting to the will of the devotee, we find that this is the gateway to attaining our real eternal nature. It is called Sharanagati. And the final teaching of Bhagavad Gita is Sharanagati. So this, in this first chapter, it's setting the scene. That's why it's called Sainya Darshan, observing the armies. But it's also called Arjun Vishadad Yoga. I mean, the dejection of Arjun. So both these things we find in the first chapter. And now, this is the, you know, when you're watching the series on TV, they always leave you with the cliffhanger. Well, this is the cliffhanger for this week. Arjun has thrown down his bow. He's beside himself. He doesn't know what to do. Now, what will Krishna tell him? This we will take up next week. And this first chapter, for everyone who wants, I have made made a little study guide explaining a summary of the chapter and a useful way of remembering the contents of the chapter by using acronyms. This is a way that people remember when they're studying by using acronyms. That means, you know, like ISKCON is an acronym, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. But the word is ISKCON, right? So the first, this first chapter, the acronym is doubt. Because, first of all, this is what Arjuna is expressing, his doubt about what he's doing. But doubt, D means Dhritarashtra and Duryodhan. You can remember their position, this war has begun. That is from verses 1 to 12. Then, ominous result. That as a result of, although, you know, they're saying, "Oh, we are very capable and we're well protected by Grandfather Bhishma and so on." It is obvious from the beginning here that there is going to be an ominous result to this war. And this is described in verses 13 to 20. Then, uncertainty. So, in uncertainty, although Arjuna knows that he's defending virtue and dharma, he's uncertain about what he should do. Then, bewilderment. He becomes bewildered. And then finally, T, the turning point, that he surrenders to Krishna. Now what shall I do? So this is a good way, and some little summary there, you can use this. For each chapter, a different acronym, we can remember the contents of each chapter through this way. I find it very useful. And also 5 questions I've prepared about the first chapter. They're more or less for your own reflection. So over the next week before we meet again, you can reflect on these questions and what the answers may be. And I've also included some resources from the web where you can download for free Srila Sridhar Maharaj's Gita. If you've got a smartphone, or Maharaj was telling last week, any smartphone can read this, or any computer you can read on PDF format. Also free download of Srila Prabhupada A.C. Bhaktivedanta's Swami Maharaj's Gita, and also very nice In MP3 format, you can download each chapter, being the Sanskrit being chanted by Srila Govinda Maharaj. Really beautiful. You can listen to that when you're, you know, doing anything, but respectfully, not just as background noise. But it's very nice and beautiful meditation to hear His Divine Grace's transcendental sound vibration. And then for next week, the verse that I want everyone to try to learn, the first, very first verse of Bhagavad Gita, Dhritarashtra Uvacha, Dharma Ketre Kuru Ketre Samaveta Yuvatsava, Mammaka Pandavaschaiva Kim Kurubhata Sanjaya. So it is all here. Everyone who wants a copy, we can get some. If everyone who wants a copy, put your hand up, yep. And I can see how many. The verse is on a separate page. If you want to learn it, you can maybe take a photograph of that with your camera, with your phone. And then when you're doing something, cooking the dinner or whatever, you can just bring that up on your phone and recite it as you're doing to learn it, you know, so that next week everyone will be able to, I'll be able to say, tell the verse, and everyone will be able to tell the verse. And Gita is very simple. The Sanskrit is very simple, actually. Bhagavatam a little bit more difficult. But I find that the Sanskrit of the Gita is very familiar and very easy.
700 slok.
Easy to hear and easy to remember. Shloka. So, in that sheet, I've given also the word for word translation, so you can learn the meaning of each word and how it all comes together. And we should mention, I want to mention also, that today is the disappearance of Baladeva Vidyabhushan Prabhu, and his commentary on Bhagavad Gita is very famous in the Gaudiya Vaishnava school. In fact, the commentary of Srila Prabhupada, A.C. Bhaktivedanta, is largely based on Baladev's commentary. And Baladev Vidyabhushan Prabhu, he was a hugely learned Vaishnava. And he's most famous for Govinda Bhasya, which is our Sampradaya's commentary on Brahma Sutra. Mahaprabhu considered Srimad Bhagavatam as the natural commentary on Brahma Sutra. So he never told anyone write commentary on Brahma Sutra. He considered the perfect and natural commentary on Brahma Sutra is Srimad Bhagavatam. And it is correct. So our Gaudiya Sampradaya never had a commentary on Brahma Sutra. Until in the time of Vishwanath and Baladeva Vidyabhushan, there was some controversy in Jaipur. Jaipur, as you know, Radha Govinda Ji, they are there. That is the deity of our Sampradaya, Rupa Goswami Prabhu's own deity in the temple, in the palace of Maharaj Jai Singh. And to this day, in the King's Palace Gardens, that temple is there and maintained by the royal family. Anyway,
and many people go there.
Many people. In Jaipur, every shop has the picture of Govinda Ji in their shop, and the most famous deity of Jaipur. Anyhow, there was some controversy there amongst the Vaishnava schools. And those who are followers of the Sri Sampradaya particularly, they wanted to show that the worship of Narayan was higher than the worship of Krishna. And some debate going on, and then news of this came to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in Vrindavan. And Vishwanath, he was then very old and infirm, so he could not go to speak on behalf of our Sampradaya, but he wanted to do that, so he sent Baladev Vidyabhushan instead. Baladev came there and was asked to speak. And their first question was, whose Sampradaya do you represent? Because historically there are four Vaishnava Sampradaya. Nimbarka Sampradaya, Sri Sampradaya, the Madhvas Sampradaya and the Rudra Sampradaya. So four Vaishnav Sampradayas. And then which one do you represent? Then he told, I represent Madhva Sampradaya. And showed by disciplic lineage, his lineage going back to Madhvacharya. Then he was accepted, yes, you can speak. Then when he spoke, his version, you can say, his explanation, very soon was understood by the Vaishnav scholars there. This is not Madhvacharya's conclusion. This is different to Madhvacharya's conclusion. Then they challenged him. You say you're representing Madhva Sampradaya, but what you are telling is different from Madhvacharya. He said, yes, it is true. What I am telling is Chaitanya Dev's version, if you like. His Siddhanta. Then they told, oh, then you cannot speak here. If you do not represent Madhva, but you represent Chaitanya Dev, you cannot speak here. Why? Because your Sampradaya cannot be recognized because you do not have a commentary on Vedanta Sutra or Brahma Sutra. And to be accepted as a bona fide Sampradaya, you must have a commentary. Then he told, Mahaprabhu considered Srimad Bhagavatam the natural commentary of Vedanta Sutra or Brahma Sutra. They said, no, we don't accept. You have to have a commentary. Then, so then, he prayed to Govindaji, and the inspiration came to him. He wrote that commentary, Gaudiya Siddhanta commentary on Vedanta Sutra, and but he felt that it was directly penned through him by Govindaji himself, and therefore he called it the Govinda Bhasya. And so, and because of that, then when he submitted that to the to all of the Vaishnava acharyas there present at that meeting, and when they read that, they all accepted. This is like perfect Siddhanta. At that point, historically, Mahaprabhu Chaitanya Dev's Sampradaya was recognized as the fifth Gaudiya Sampradaya. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written there, has written about that, that in the future, all of the other Vaishnav Sampradayas, they will merge into Mahaprabhu's Sampradaya. Because Mahaprabhu is able to reconcile all the different philosophies of those four Vaishnav Sampradayas to make them all cohesive and one. So anyhow, Baladeva Vidyabhushan, very famous for that Govinda Bhasya. And right at the beginning of Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, you'll see, dedicated to Baladeva Vidyabhushan, who so wonderfully wrote the Govinda Bhasya commentary on Vedanta Sutra. His disappearance day to day, so we have to say something in his honor, very Param Vaishnava, and our Param Gurudev. After Mahaprabhu, he is one of the main exponents of the Gaudiya Sampradaya. So today is, and so his commentary very valuable. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also wrote two commentaries on Bhagavad Gita, one based on Baladev's commentary. We can end here tonight, and Jai Gurudev, Jai Guru Maharaj, Jai Srimad Bhagavad Gita Study Group Ki Jai.
Jai.
Jai. Krishna Arjun Ki Jai.
Jai.
Jai Sri Sri Guru Guranga Radha Sham Sunda Giridhari Jiv Ki Jai. Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Itai Gaura Premanande.
Jai Shipad Deva Shishwa, leading the Gita Group Study Ki Jai.
Hari Haraya Nama Krishna Yadavaya Namaha.
Hari Haraya Nama Krishna Yadavaya Namaha.
Hari Haraya Nama Krishna Yadavaya Namaha.